Long white hair streaming behind him, the young man ran through the woods. On the mat-like floor of dead needles, his combat moccasin boots made little more sound than morning mist flowing between the straight boles of spruce and fir. He was short and slight of build, and expertly dodged around potentially noisy patches of scrub oak, dry-leaved and prone to rattle in the early spring. Nor did he brush against low-hanging tree boughs. Yet the way he moved so quietly, despite the fact he ran flat out, and even when he vaulted a low, snaggle-toothed arch of dead-fallen tree, seemed somehow almost supernatural. That the skin of his face was as white as his hair did nothing to dispel the ghostly illusion. Nor did his eyes, narrowed with exertion, that gleamed red as shards of ruby. But ectoplasm wouldn't take scars like the one that seamed his narrow, feral face and pulled the right-hand corner of his mouth upward in a hint of perpetual grin. Nor was there anything the least bit insubstantial about the chrome-plated steel of the .357 Magnum Colt Python blaster he clutched in his right hand. As swift as a deer he moved, and as silent as a thought. But his hunter's heart, virtual stranger to fear, felt it now. Because as fast as he was whipped by the dread certainty he couldn't move fast enough to save his friends.
The boy stood on the burning deck.
Doc, how come I'm the one who usually winds up elbow deep in deer guts whenever we get lucky hunting?
J.B. Dix, known otherwise as the Armorer, grinned at Dr. Mildred Wyeth around the carcass of the young white-tailed buck that had been strung from a sturdy tree limb by its hind legs. Morning sunlight glinted off the round lenses of his steel-framed spectacles.
"'Cause you're the doctor, Millie. You wield a mean scalpel."
She flipped him a gory bird.
The boy stood on the burning deck.
Dr. Theophilus Tanner had the air of a man trying to jar something loose from memory's grasp. He was tall, with lank, gray-white hair that fell to his shoulders. He wore a calf-length frock coat that had seen better days, and cradled a Smith & Wesson M4000 shotgun in his twig-skinny arms.
I was a cryogenics researcher, for God's sake, John, not a surgeon. Much less a veterinary pathologist.
Well, I reckon you know what you're doing.
You might as well make that crazy old coot you're trusting with your shotgun there do the gutting, since he's entitled to call himself doctor, too.
You got training in cutting up, folks. You told me so yourself. Everybody in med school did back in the day. Maybe you just missed your calling.
Yeah. Maybe I should have become a cutter instead of a researcher. Then I could have been rich. Had a big house and a burbs, a nice docile hubby, 2.5 kids, a shiny new caddy every year.
Mildred looked thoughtful, scratched at her cheek with the very tip of her thumb, as if maybe if she did it gingerly enough, she wouldn't get gore on her cheek. She failed.
And then, of course, I'd have died while at the operating table instead of having a nice experimental cold sleep pod on hand to get slipped into for a snug century or so.
I'm glad you pulled through, Millie.
Yeah. Well, at times like this, I'm almost glad, too, even if I am stuck on shit detail. A little peace and quiet is doing us all a world of good. Sometimes it seems we're in danger of getting too dependent on what we can scavenge from the redoubts or scam out of the vills. Woman does not live by century-old MREs alone. Or at least this woman doesn't.
The boy stood on the burning deck.
Eating peanuts by the peck.
What? What was that?
That's the next line, Doc. Trust me.
Quoth the raven, nevermore.
And here I thought he was okay these days.
Doc, don't go wandering off into Neverland now. We need you to keep a sharp lookout. Not had a whiff of anything menacing, two-legged or more, Norm or Mutie, in 3 whole days. And that very fact itself makes me uneasy.
The old man nodded. His eyes seemed to have gained focus.
You are quite correct, John Barrymore. It's when the illusion of peace and safety seems most perfect that danger draws nigh.
Yeah? Any state less than constant screaming terror just isn't natural.
They don't call these the Deathlands for nothing.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, and Thomas Penny. Deathlands 68, Shaking Earth.
Ryan Carter lay on the ground, with his bare feet planted in a lush mat of fallen ponderosa pine needles, long and gracefully curved as sabers, held together at the bases in clusters of three. The freedom afforded by temporary safety, to take his boots off and feel untainted nature beneath his soles, was an almost erotic pleasure. Christy Roth, the most beautiful woman of the Deathlands, and not just in her mate's single prejudiced eye, lay on the ground beside him. Both were gloriously nude, enjoying a moment of closeness and solitude after an hour of lovemaking. He marveled at the sight of her, her white skin given a faint golden luster by the sunlight filtering through the trees. He would never tire of her, could never imagine tiring of her beauty, her vitality, her untamable spirit. Both of them were alert to their surroundings, knew from the soft forest sounds that no immediate danger threatened. Both also knew the interlude could last but moments, that they would need to pick themselves up and square themselves away too soon, because, as Mildred had just observed, unheard by them, peace and safety were unnatural states in the Deathlands, unstable as an isotope of plutonium. All the same, the Deathlands had taught them to make the most of any and all such moments they could tear out of the grim fabric of their daily lives. He stroked her cheek. They kissed.
Time to go, lover.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Ryan.
They stood. Ryan picked up his Steyr sniper rifle and stood guard, unselfconscious of being buck-ass naked, while Christy dressed, without either hurrying or dawdling. Then she took temporary possession of the long blaster while he got his clothes on. When he was ready, she handed him back the rifle with a smile.
Better get back to camp, lover. Don't want the others to think we're ducking the dirty work.
Ryan had cranked the bolt on reflex on getting the blaster back, pulling it back so as to see the comforting gleam of brass in the chamber, just a sliver, because he knew from bitter experience that an unexamined blaster was always in the worst possible condition. Because the forest sounds around them, the squirrel cussing them out from up the tree, and the Stellar's jays yammering at each other from the scrub, had gone as still as the grave.